You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. A new poll shows that half of U.S. adults who are unemployed and looking for work are pessimistic about their prospects. In addition, most say they've considered changing careers since being out of work. Coming up, we'll talk to a career expert about not just finding a job, but finding the job that's right for us. Now, Republican state lawmakers are speaking out about where they are and aren't going with Governor Evers' proposed budget for the next 2 years. Evers unveiled his budget proposal last month. The state budget process now kicks into gear with a July 1st deadline for finishing it, sort of. State lawmakers say they're going to start from scratch instead of working from the governor's budget. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you like or dislike about Governor Evers' budget proposal? What would you like to see Republicans keep or get rid of or compromise on? What questions do you have about how this budget thing works in Wisconsin? And if you had to pick one thing you wanted to fund, increase funding for, cut funding for, what would it be? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Kathleen Dolan is a distinguished professor of political science at UW-Milwaukee. Kathy, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Before we get into the details here, Kathy, I want to talk about just the importance of the budget. We talk about it a lot on this show and on this network, but this is really, in a lot of ways, the biggest thing our state legislature and governor do in Wisconsin. It covers so much. Can you talk about just why it's such a big deal?
Well, you know, it's a big deal because it spends an enormous amount of money and it funds so many programs that are vital to people's lives. And it really exists as an articulation of the values and the policies of say, the governor and the government and the state in terms in general terms, because certainly voters put, you know, government leaders in place hoping that they will do the sort of, you know, bidding of the people. So there really are, in Wisconsin particularly, there's no bigger, you know, legislative package that will go through in a cycle. And if you think about the legislature, I mean, it really, at least in the last year or so, has not been particularly active from a legislative perspective. And so all focus really does sort of rest on the budget.
Now, we have this proposal from the governor. We'll get to the Republican response in a bit. Can you just talk about the process and the timeline to get from here to this July 1st soft deadline, is the way it's worked out in the past?
Well, the governor, obviously, with his budget staff, has been working on what they see as a blueprint and all of the requests that they take from state agencies and from, say, the UW system and again, the budget, I think, very clearly articulates a series of values and priorities that Governor Evers has. But, you know, governors and presidents, right, as executives, don't make the laws and they don't appropriate the dollars. So now all power, you know, sort of turns and sits to the legislature through the Joint Finance Committee and through hearings and, you know, all sorts of things that will go on behind the scenes and some things that will go on in public as a Republican legislature articulates its priorities and values in a budget that they might want to pass. And they will obviously be able to shape and pass what they choose. And then because Wisconsin has the unique line item veto for governors, you know, then there will be the sort of dance back and forth between the Democratic governor and the budget that the Republican legislature presents him. And as he tries to use the veto to make changes, you know, as we work, as you say, to hopefully some sort of summer resolution to all of this back and forth.
I want to give a listen to Assembly Leader Robin Voss, Republican from Rochester, talking at a virtual event put on by the Wisconsin County Association here. He's responding to the Evers budget proposal.
I certainly think we're going to do a better job. We're going to throw out his entire budget like we have done before. We'll start from scratch. We will end up building a budget that focuses on our priorities and the ones of the state of Wisconsin, not relitigating things that have clearly proven to be successful or are incredibly divisive. No purpose in doing that inside the budget. So I'm actually pretty optimistic. I think we have a great relationship with the Senate. I think we have two caucuses who are pretty united in our belief that we're not going to raise revenues. We're going to keep spending in check. We're going to invest in things that matter, but we're certainly not going to do a liberal wish list like Governor Evers put together.
Obviously divided government here in Wisconsin. Kathy, how does that shape what a budget ends up looking like?
Well, you know, Assembly Speaker Voss in his comment there said, you know, that they are going to articulate a budget that represents the values of Wisconsin. And that, of course, you know, is a political leader trying to negate the fact that the last time the state voted for a governor, it chose a Democrat. So, you know, given that we have divided government, it would be nice, right, if the two chambers of the legislature, you know, and the governor can work to come up with some compromise. But I don't think we'll see that, you know, at least at the beginning. They obviously will use the budget to articulate their preferences and their values, and they will be very different from the many of the items that exist in the budget as Governor Evers presented it.
We're talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, looking at the budget process now underway here in Wisconsin. Governor Evers gave his proposal. State lawmakers, Republican leaders say they're going to start from scratch. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What would you like to see come out of the state budget? Are there things that you think need more spending on, or do you want to see more tax cuts here in the state? Revenues restricted, as we heard from the Assembly Speaker there. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Now, one item, Kathy, that both sides have talked about some is expanding broadband access in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that people keep saying, hey, maybe we might not agree on the exact amount to spend, but that's something we could agree on. First of all, could you talk about that issue and why it's something that both parties might find common ground on?
Well, you know, it is certainly the case that in 2021, we would expect all residents of Wisconsin to be able to have, you know, strong, reliable broadband that reaches all parts of the state. And so given the size of the state, given the rural nature of some of the state, given the infrastructure that is required for broadband, this is one of those issues that can touch everybody. So, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike have constituents who are affected by this issue. And this is certainly something that, you know, probably inhibits the evolution of businesses in some areas. You know, if they can't get reliable broadband, there are probably all sorts of ways in which the economic impact, as well as the personal and the social and the cultural and the occupational impact, you know, the last year has taught us that to keep moving forward with education and with all of our work lives, you know, everybody needs strong and consistent access to broadband. So bringing it to all corners of the state is clearly something that benefits all residents of Wisconsin. And so it is something that, you know, it may be an unusual issue that affects everybody, or at least affects enough people that members of both parties really want to try to figure out a solution.
Now, there were some items in the governor's budget that we heard Speaker Voss talk about as a liberal wish list. A few of them reinstating some collective bargaining rights rolled back about 10 years ago by Act 10, background checks on gun purchases, increasing Wisconsin's minimum wage, legalizing marijuana. The list goes on with some fiscal elements to them, but they're kind of more policy things. What do you think about, and there have been complaints about past governors doing that too, what do you think of these kind of policy items cropping up in the budget documents?
Well, putting policy proposals in budget documents is not a new thing, and it is not exclusively a Wisconsin thing or a state level thing. You know, members of Congress try this as well. And at the national level, you know, Congress, there are very arcane laws about what can and can't go in a budget bill. And we have some of those same sort of regulations here. But governors, you know, want to try to use budget bills to advance policies, legislative policies, because budgets have to pass. And so if a governor can get a particular proposal inside a budget bill and get it through the process such that it is accepted, it may have an easier time being accepted that way than it would as a standalone piece of legislation. There are, as you say, critics of the use of the budget as a tool for legislative implementation, but that is one of the consequences that, you know, a political consequence that has evolved over time.
We're talking to political science professor Kathleen Dolan from UW-Milwaukee about where the state budget process goes from here after Republican lawmakers said they'd start from scratch instead of starting from the governor's budget proposals. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you see areas for potential compromise between the governor and the legislature? What are some issues that really matter to you in the state budget? Love to hear about it and hear why. What is important to you and your community? You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk now with Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at UW-Milwaukee, looking at the state budget, the debate over it, and where it goes from here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Sandra is with us in Madison. Sandra, hello.
Hi. I wanted to say two things. The first is, I think it's really unconscionable that the legislature thinks that they should start from scratch with a budget when it's the people of Wisconsin who voted Governor Evers in to be our governor. And so that really makes me upset. But I also want to say that one of the things that I found in the budget that I looked at that I thought was really great was the idea of workforce funding for workforce development for people in green jobs and in renewable energy, because that's such a up and coming and here field, and it pays really well. And it would, you know, that would be a wonderful way to help people get higher paying jobs in our state.
Sandra, thanks a lot for that call. And Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is scheduled to be on the morning show on Monday, I believe at 7:30, to talk about issues related to green energy and climate change in the budget. Kathy, I think a lot of states are at least toying with proposals like that, trying to boost green energy jobs. Do you see this as something that could get support on both sides of the aisle in the legislature here?
Well, it's hard to say because, as the caller suggests, it is a burgeoning field, and it is one that could lead to, you know, as say even President Biden says, lots of, you know, good, well-paying jobs in the future. In a state like Wisconsin, there may be some tension with more traditional manufacturing interests because there is at least a perception that, you know, moving toward green manufacturing or green production in different industries is costly for industry. And so the Republican legislature may not be as amenable to those ideas if they are receiving, you know, some signals from manufacturers that those paths are not favored. It is also the case that, you know, green jobs and the environmental sorts of things are very much a Democratic, you know, identified initiative. And so the politics of, you know, giving the governor a win, so to speak, by adopting some of those policies are really only going to come if the Republicans are genuinely on board with believing that they are good investments of Wisconsin's dollars.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go to Pat now in Green Bay. Pat, hello.
Good afternoon, people. I guess the two things I don't quite understand. Number one, why can't everybody just sit down, write down what they want, you know, what the legislators want, what the governor wants as far as the budget goes, and then sit down like adults instead of spoiled children and hash everything out. I mean, it's real simple. Most people do it on a daily basis. I mean, you work together, not against each other. And then the other thing, why are they so hesitant about legalization of marijuana? Has anybody looked at the tax revenue that states like California and Colorado have generated? It's unbelievable.
Pat, thanks a lot. Gave us a lot to talk about. That first point, I think, is something that a lot of people ask, Kathy. Why can't they, the Democrats and Republicans in state government, sit down together like adults and reach some kind of compromise?
Well, you know, I mean, at some level, that the process that will play out will do that, you know, in that the governor has come up with his list of things. You know, Pat suggested everybody should write a list of the things they want. The governor has done that by submitting his budget. The legislative process is such, right, that the legislature does have the power to pass the budget since they control legislation. And so they will use the budget to come up with their wish list. We can think of the compromise as the part of the process where the governor uses his line item veto to take things out of the budget he might dislike. The legislature will then have the opportunity to override those vetoes. And so it is a contentious process. It is not people sitting down at a table and trying to agree. But what we have to remember at the end of the day is that the Democrats and the Republicans, both in the state and nationally, believe and want very different things. And so it's not always easy to compromise on things that are associated with core values. So the governor's budget proposes, you know, a significant investment in the UW system. And Republicans may or may not value that same level of investment, or whether it is, you know, the workforce development pieces. So the two different parties, they stand for different things. And we are in a place right now of divided government in Wisconsin, and it's really hard to navigate compromise among groups of people, you know, who are motivated by different goals. It is also the case, you know, as we've seen at the national level, that political polarization has increased, and there are people who govern less to promote policy and govern more to promote wins than anything else. And you know, Pat may think that that's not the right way for things to happen, but that's the consequence of what we have in divided government right now.
And he also mentioned marijuana legalization, part of Governor Evers' budget proposal, not getting warm welcomes from Republicans. Wisconsin getting to be more of an outlier, though, as a lot of our neighbors have medical and or recreational marijuana legalized. Why is Wisconsin different, do you think?
Marijuana legalization is a complex issue. And it's a complex issue because there are lots of different components to it. As you pointed out, there is the medical marijuana legalization, as well as the decriminalization of marijuana and the legal sale of marijuana. So there are a lot of moving parts. It is the case for some people, marijuana use is still a moral issue where people want to make distinctions, saying that, you know, it is now an illegal substance, and by making it legal, somehow we're crossing some moral line. I'm not suggesting that's the reason for the opposition here in Wisconsin. States that have legalized have had to do an enormous amount of work in terms of setting up licenses for dispensaries. And, you know, is it a state function? Is it a private function? How do we allow people to be licensed? You know, it's not an easy fix. And so it seems pretty clear that there are members of the legislature here in Wisconsin that are opposed to it. I don't know individually what the nature of their opposition is, but as you say, the trend is certainly for medical marijuana usage to be legalized more broadly. And there is at least, you know, it may be the case that 15, 20 years from now, we look back and say that marijuana legalization has expanded much more broadly. But we're sort of in the middle of that evolution now nationally.
Let's go back to our callers now. Ricardo is with us in Madison. Ricardo, hello.
Hi, hello. One of the things that I would like to see on the budget proposal was the thing that he promised during when he ran, and he actually had it on his first budget proposal, was the inclusion of driver's license for undocumented immigrants. He promised that when he was running, and somehow he still has not made that happen. I know it's been a tough year. That kind of also links to the marijuana, I guess, legalization, because driver's licenses are also legalized in other states. But that is one of the things that I would like to see. I think that will help workers, especially in the farm business, for people to be able to drive.
Ricardo, gotcha. We just have a little bit of time left, Kathy, and I think he's right. Governor Evers has proposed driver's licenses for undocumented workers in Wisconsin in his previous budget, 2019. I believe it is not in the current budget, not a proposal I think that would get, a warm welcome from Republican lawmakers.
Well, no. And again, Ricardo points to an issue on which there are pretty big party differences. And, you know, we have to remember that governors and presidents campaign on telling us all of the things that they want to do if they are elected. But we always have to remember that executive power does not allow governors, particularly, and the president to create law. There are ways in which presidents through executive order can create policy, and governors are a little more limited along those lines. But what governors are telling us when they campaign is that these are the things that they want to do and that they will work on, but that they don't have the legislative power at their own hands to do those things. And so the absence of that proposal in the 2020 budget is probably an indicator that Governor Evers heard very clearly from the legislature that that was not going to happen. And so there perhaps was a decision made that there wasn't a use in putting it in the budget because they were told last year not to pursue it.
Ricardo, thanks for the call. And Kathy, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
We've been talking to Kathleen Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She joined us for a look at the state budget. Governor Evers made his proposal. State lawmakers, leading Republicans, say they're going to write their own up, and then there the process goes. You can follow progress of the state budget over at WPR.org with ongoing reporting from our news team. Coming up, need some advice on finding a job, switching careers, negotiating a raise. We'll get some advice from an expert, and you can share your thoughts, questions, and your own experiences. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, it's the weekly roundup of news from around the world, including a brutal crackdown on protesters in Myanmar and the Pope's visit to Iraq. That and more coming up today at 6 on 1A+. Now, the February employment numbers are out. According to the Labor Department, 379,000 jobs were added. That's about 170,000 more than expected. The unemployment rate fell to 6.2%. A year ago, it was just under 4%. As the pandemic ramped up a few weeks later, it shot up to nearly 15% before coming back down. The trend is in the right direction, but unemployment remains a problem, and it's showing up in different ways. According to a recent survey from Pew Research, half of U.S. adults who are unemployed, furloughed, or temporarily laid off and looking for work are pessimistic about their prospects, and two-thirds say they've considered changing careers since they lost their jobs. Plus, there's the emotional and mental health issues that go along with being unemployed. And if you have a job, are you happy with it? A 2017 Gallup poll showed that only 30% of Americans say they're engaged at work. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like your job? Are you really glad to be done with the week? Did you lose your job during the pandemic? What has it been like trying to find new work? Have you thought about making a career change? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ken Coleman is a career expert in Nashville and host of The Ken Coleman Show. He's the author of The Proximity Principle, the proven strategy that will lead to the career you love. Ken, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thrilled to be with you, Rob.
Well, now with the pandemic, a year into this thing, hopefully light at the end of the tunnel, what are people asking you about the most, Ken, when it comes to jobs?
I think the question we're getting the most is, Which option should I take? I mean, we just are seeing people that are moving forward and they're beginning to consider, should I go to this particular job or this particular job? I know the sector I want to be in. I know the type of work I want to do. And that's a result of they're listening to our show, and the Ken Coleman Show is constantly working through, you know, what you were created to do, how to figure that out. And so we have a lot of callers that are educated on that methodology, but it's also really encouraging that people are more than ever, because of the pandemic, are saying, you know what, I saw a massive disruption hit me, or if it didn't hit me personally, it hit people that I know, and certainly a large portion of our country and even around the world. This was not a U.S. pandemic. And so they're saying, you know what, if I'm going to get kicked out of the nest, I kind of want to jump out myself. And I think that that's what we're seeing more of, is people considering, as you mentioned in your setup, changing careers because they weren't really engaged enjoying the work they were doing prior to COVID.
Well, let's talk to the people who are in a line of work that was hit especially hard, the restaurant workers, the mm-hmm. travel and tourism people, you know, where people have to gather in the place you work. They might have been unemployed for quite a long time. Maybe they like their work, maybe not, but they might be looking for something different. How would you suggest they get started and figure out where they go next?
Yeah, so they need to get clear. And this is stage one of my 7 stages to meaningful work. And what do we mean by get clear? Well, this is truly self-awareness, Rob. And so you're going to look at 3 elements that every human being has. Number 1, talent. Everybody's born with talent, maybe raw talent, but you can hone it into a sharpened skill. Think of it as a lump of clay that the potter, you know, obviously shapes it into a very usable tool or vessel. And so the same thing with skills, starts with talent. So what do you do best? What has always come easy for you? People have complimented you on it. It's just something that you've seen other people struggle, comes easy to you. The 2 categories here are hard skills. That's an actual skill that you can put to work, technical in nature, not necessarily technology, but you're using your hands, your mind, that type of work. And then the soft skills, which people call people skills. So compassion, patience, you know, that kind of a skill. So hard skills, soft skills. What do you do best? And you really want to assess the things you do best, not the things that you do okay and average, the things you do best. Then we look at passion. Do an assessment on what's the work that I love to do. When I think about this type of a task, a function, or maybe a role, I get excited about it. When I'm in the middle of it, I've got the juice, as I say. You know, you're alive. You feel joy when you're engaged in it. You don't want to stop it, and time seems to disappear. And then finally, what results do you care deeply about? Work creates results, so what results do you want to contribute to the world? What do you want your contribution to be? I call that mission. So you use what you do best, talent, to perform work you love, passion, to accomplish or produce results that matter deeply to you. That's mission. So that's what I teach on the Ken Coleman Show. And for anybody looking to say, where do I really want to go? What was I created to do in my work life? Because I think we were created to work. You could substitute work with contribute, and you realize this is not about being a workaholic. This isn't about your entire identity being your professional identity. It is your contribution. And so that's how you get clear. And that's how you begin to see, oh, I can use my talent to do this type of work and produce this kind of result in multiple jobs, multiple career paths, and even multiple industries.
Talking to Ken Coleman, career expert in Nashville, host of The Ken Coleman Show, author of the book, The Proximity Principle. Let's go to your calls now at 800-642-1234 with your questions, maybe your own advice or your experience in the work world today. Keith is with us in Black River Falls. Keith, hello.
Hello. Well, I'm listening to this and I'm just saying yes, yes, yes. I came into my career kind of a little later in life than most. I was in my late 30s when I discovered that things that I've enjoyed doing at my own place for friends, and it's basically construction work, contracting, home repair, things like that. And after a couple quite well-paying jobs just weren't satisfying to me, I resigned and I took up contracting. And I get up every day with problems to solve. I make people happy by fixing their problems. I feel satisfied when I'm done at the end of the day. And actually, with this pandemic, everybody's finding things for me. So I've got more more satisfaction over the last couple of years than I've had for quite a while. So anyway, this program is really speaking to me, and I urge everybody out there to try and find that which gives you passion, which makes you enjoy getting up and going to work.
Yeah. I love it, Keith. Thanks a lot, Ket. He's on your page. Yeah.
Well, you know, he just described it beautifully. I mean, he put real life example to the methodology I just explained. You know, Keith feels tremendous, deep, abiding satisfaction every day because he is contributing something that is significant to him. And it's significant to him because he sees the significance that he is creating for other people. And that's what this is about. Finding our purpose, Rob, is not about us. It's about others.
Thanks for that call, Keith. It occurs to me, though, Ken, some employer out there lost Keith. How, if I'm a boss or if I'm running an organization, how can I make sure that my employees can find at least some of that stuff they're looking for in the job so that they do feel engaged? They don't want to go off and do something different.
Yes, that's a brilliant question. I'm so glad you asked it. And this is what's really going on. You quoted some data at the setup of my appearance here. We may have given it to you, but that Gallup poll has been pretty consistent for the last 5 to 7 years. That right at 70% of people in America are not engaged at work. And so let's look at the word engaged there. It doesn't mean they hate their job, because I think a lot of people are grateful for their job, certainly now more than ever. However, what's driving engagement? What drives engagement is what I just went through a moment ago. When you're using what you do best, most of your job, most of your day, you're using your talents. So you're very proficient, and that feels good. Nobody likes to do anything they're awful at. Except for golf, that's just me, you know. But then you're also doing work you love. So you most of your day, not all of your day, but most of your day, you know, you're doing work that you really enjoy engaging in. And then, of course, you see the results of your work every day. The evidence is there. So to answer your question, leaders must think of each position they're hiring for and say, who is the ideal person for this role? And if they were to use Ken Coleman's sweet spot analogy, they'd say, well, they've got to have this talent. It's non-negotiable for them to enjoy this job. And then they've got to love this type of work, because that's just non-negotiable. That's what this role is made of. And then they've got to care deeply about producing this result. That's what this company does. That's what this particular job does. And so you want to put people, as Jim Collins, the great author of Good to Great and many other books, has found from his research, they're the right person on the right seat, or in the right seat, rather, of the bus. So if leaders are seeing a disconnect and someone's disengaged, it's probably because they are either not doing something that they care deeply about. There's no passion, no juice for the job, or they're bored. They're not being challenged enough, or they're overlooked. They feel like they're underappreciated. And again, that's a leadership problem. So those are three factors that leaders need to look at. And if you're addressing those issues the way I just described, you got a good chance for long-term retention, Rob.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jake is with us in Appleton. Jake, hello.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Jake?
You know, I just want to say I was one of the fortunate ones to retain my current employment with my employer here in Wisconsin. But ever since the COVID pandemic began, we went through a restructuring, and some were let go. Some had different positions. Others weren't affected at all. I had to go into a new position. While I'm thankful for the fact that I'm working, there's this looming feeling of uncertainty. And I feel like I wasn't sure if I was asleep at the wheel and not aware that so much could change at the blink of an eye. But I also not sure how to separate that from maybe I was asleep at the wheel. Maybe I, you know, this is kind of like a wake-up call to really see, you know, engage, you know, how fast things could transition and where to go from there. So it was definitely a weird feeling, and I'm still navigating that. And that change happened less than 6 months ago.
Wow. Mm. Well, Jake, best to you as you navigate that. And that makes me think, Ken, you know, even if we feel secure right now in our position, how can we cultivate, I guess, a sense of resilience for if and when that big change comes?
Yeah, so let's address this. And Jake, I don't want you to beat yourself up, because the reality is we can only control the controllables, and nobody can control a worldwide pandemic that has so many unknowns attached to it. And employers didn't know what to do. Government officials didn't know what to do. It was kind of a, hey, let's just try to figure this out and make the best decision we can. And so I don't think you were asleep at the switch in this particular situation or at the wheel. But the bigger question, Rob, is people need to know what they want to do. What is that role that you were created to fill? What is your sweet spot? And we go back to this. What are my top talents? What is the work I love to do? And what are the results that I want to create? And we put all those together where they intersect. It creates a contribution zone. I'm calling it the sweet spot, but we just call it the contribution zone. And so as long as I'm aware of that, when life throws its detours at us, because it will, or potholes, and I think we could call COVID a tornado of potholes and detours and everything that life could possibly throw at us. It was just crazy. So what do? When we get knocked off the path, we retreat to clarity, back to what I started with. And then we say, okay, wait a second. I got kicked out of this job, this company, but it's unsettling and it can create confusion. And so I'm going to simplify. The best way to get out of a confusing situation is to simplify, simplify, simplify. I'm going to get clear again. Wait a second. I know my sweet spot. Okay, I know the type of work that I want to do that makes me feel alive. So I'm going to look for it in other places so that no matter what life throws at us, we know the mountaintop. We know that professional pinnacle. We know what that dream job is. We ought to know it, Rob, because when we know it, no matter what happens to us, we can get back on the path. We know the mountaintop. So if we have to strike a new path up because of a mudslide, if you will, using the mountain analogy, that's okay. And so I think that's key for folks like Jake that have been through that. You've got to know the big picture, the big, hairy, audacious goal, as Jim Collins refers to it. What's that mountaintop, that dream job? And then I know that pinnacle so that no matter what happens, I can dust myself off, get back up, and keep moving.
Thanks for that call. We're talking about the best way to find the job or career that's right for us with Ken Coleman, career expert in Nashville, host of the Ken Coleman Show. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you rethinking your career, your job right now? Did you rethink it? Made a big switch? How did it work for you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about work-related issues, identifying the role, the career that's best for us, applying for jobs, dealing with difficult bosses, whatever else is on your mind. Ken Coleman stays with us, career expert in Nashville, author of the book, The Proximity Principle, the proven strategy that will lead to the career you love. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Charlotte is with us in Evansville. Charlotte, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest could provide some resources for, like, for example, my husband has been in banking for about 15 years and started doing that out of high school. Now has decided that's definitely not what he wants to be doing, and obviously not in high school anymore, so doesn't have, you know, a guidance counselor to help him hone in his wide range of interests. So where would you start with that?
All right, be the guidance counselor for him, Ken.
Yeah, so we want to, again, have him look at what has he always wanted to do. You know, I love this when we get callers on the Ken Coleman Show that kind of have an idea, but they're not really sure. And so we want to let the heart speak. We want to get the brain out of this thing and not worry about how I get qualified, how long it'll take, how much it's going to cost. We just begin to say, what would I do tomorrow if there was no risk? What would he do if he knew he could not fail, but he didn't have to commit the next 30 years of his life to? So this is that risk-free work adventure. I'd ask him that question. The second thing is I would have him delve into things that he has wondered about. And I can tell you this, even when I'll have a caller sometimes, we'll say, Ken, I just have no idea. And I say, yeah, you do. You've thought of something, whether it was 3 weeks ago, 3 years ago, 13 years ago, or sometimes 30 years ago. What have you wondered about? What would it have been like if I had done this? And so what we're hearing here is we're hearing the heart. We allow the heart to speak, and the brain is kind of speaking from a voice of fear and doubt, maybe even pride. What others may think, what others going to say if I leave this really nice banking job. These are real enemies of progress. So I'd have him start there. And once he begins to identify the work that he would really like to do, we want to match it up with that exercise. Is that in his contribution zone? Is he built for that? Does he have the talent to do it? Does he love that type of work? Does this match up with the results that he wants to create? And if the answer is yes, 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 then he doesn't need to wonder whether or not he's going to be a good fit for it. Now it's about, what's it going to take to get qualified? What do I need to learn? What do I need to do? How much is that going to cost? How long is that going to take? And that puts a plan together. Now, I just put you almost on tilt with a lot of information. So what I would tell you is we have a nationally syndicated radio show and people calling from around the world because we podcast it. So I'd have him call the Ken Coleman Show Monday through Friday, 12 to 2 Eastern Standard Time. We got a toll-free number right there at kencoleman.com, and I'd love to have him call the show. And inside of 5 to 6 minutes, I think we could set him free.
All right. Good luck to your husband, Charlotte, as he figures this out. We'll go to Roy now in Wauwatosa. Roy, hi.
So, long and short of it, there are people that work very hard, and they are very engaged, and they work harder than I do. I know these people. They have a very strong ethic that they had at a young age. Mm-hmm. The thing that irritates me, I mean, the percentage that you gave with regards to people that are not engaged at work is, I'm stunned. It's one of those things where if you take into consideration you're not engaged at work, then you're ripping off those people that you work for. And Americans need to stop ripping people off, especially other Americans.
Roy, thanks for the call. Roy, not really approving of people not being engaged at work. We can maybe bear down a little bit more, Ken.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, I think he's irritated. He's like, wait a second, what's going on here? And I think we have to really break down the word engagement from that study. And what that simply means is they're doing the bare minimum. They're doing the job that is asked of them, but they're not doing it at, you know, full gusto. Their heart's not in it. They're doing the job, and that doesn't mean they're doing a bad job. It's just that they're not trying to do this work to get promoted. They're not trying to do this work because they have a deep, abiding, missional attachment to it. It's just a safe job. And this is because, Rob, here's the deal. I'm taking on a really, really big school of thought. This is going to take me a couple decades to really turn this ship. And that is that most people look at work as a utilitarian function. I work to live. In other words, I work to make enough money to take care of my basic needs, shelter, food, my utilities, transportation, clothing. Anything else is just, you know, extra memories. And people live for the weekend. That's why they're miserable on Monday mornings and they just count down until Friday afternoon. That's what we mean by people aren't engaged. They're not fired up for the work. And here's the other thing, Rob, this really has a lot of other implications to it. We know this from data, tons of studies that I don't have time to quote, but it's out there for anybody who wants to look it up. When you are unhappy in your work, you are not fulfilled in your work, it affects you as a spouse. It affects you as a parent. It affects you as a coworker, a teammate, a friend, a brother, son. There is this deep longing in every human being, no matter where you are in the world, no matter how you vote or what your faith is or no faith at all. Everybody has this nagging question, why am I here? And we can all kind of answer it by just saying, I want to help people. There is a decency about all humans, and we long to make a difference. That's what most people can agree on. And so that's what's happening when people aren't engaged. They don't see their work as attached to anything other than a paycheck.
Just a few moments left, Ken. One exercise I'd like you to share where we think about a character we admire in a book or movie. Yeah. What can we learn from them?
Oh, I love this. This is for people having a hard time finding that juice, that passion and mission. So here's what you do. Think of your favorite book, novel, television show, movie. And once you begin to think of that, begin to think, well, who's the character that I would play? Or who's the character that I connect most with in that story? And then ask yourself why. And as you begin to detail out why you connect to that character, why you admire that character, why you would play that character, you begin to learn something about your heart. That just strips everything away. Insecurities, fear, pride, what others have said about us. And it lets us see, this is what makes my heart excited. And that's an indicator of the role. Something similar. You want to play that role in this world. That's the mark you want to make. It's a great exercise.
That's a good place to leave it, Ken. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Ken Coleman, career expert in Nashville, host of The Ken Coleman Show. He's the author of the book, The Proximity Principle, the proven strategy that will lead to the career you love. We talked with him about finding the job that's in our sweet spot where our talent, passion, and mission come together. You can find more information at WPR.org/Central Time. And maybe if you'd like to share your experience or rethinking your career, your line of work, you can tell us about it. Email ideas@WPR.org or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent. Monday at 8, the author of the new book, Fevers, Feuds, and Diamonds, shares lessons learned from Ebola outbreaks and what we can do to prevent the future spread of that and other diseases. That's Monday at 8 on The Morning Show. Up next, it's news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then states and local governments took a revenue hit from COVID-19, but it wasn't as bad as expected. We'll find out how the governments closest to our daily lives weathered that storm and what the future could look like. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.